This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, from the crap part of the crap Chelsea. It's the Men in Blazers' third annual night of the Golden Blazer! Yeah! Presented by Minnie! Yeah!
It's one of my favourite nights of the year. The Golden Blazer. It's the most prestigious blazer ceremony in sport. That is not given out in a butler golf cabin.
Yep.
Who will it be? Ugh. We have just 1 hour before we find out. The bookies have just made their statements. They have a second favourite, Jason Day. Firm favourite, Hattrick Rick. Have you got the tingling, David? How excited are you?
Well, as you know, I've got a terrible memory, Rog. I can't actually remember who's winning the Golden Blazer. So I'm very excited. I'm just excited to be here. I'm excited to find out, Rog.
Oh, I don't like to be hyperbolic about Men in Blazers crap. But we've done this. This is a night about a blazer given to someone who's growing the sport we love.
Yeah.
In the country we love.
Yeah.
Oh, we've done it twice before. The inaugural blazer given to the general, Bob Lee.
Bob Lee!
Last year, Super Julie Foudy.
Oh. We are not worthy, Rog. We're not worthy.
Let me just say that tonight, Davo and I are aiming, and this is lofty. We firmly believe if we operate at a near suboptimal level, we can make sure this is in the top three Golden Blazers of all time.
Aims.
Top four, anyway.
Aims.
All right? Let's start, though. We like to start high in the most optimal of ways and then just have everything go to crap.
They've seen our show.
As you know, there's not a day I don't get out of bed and thank God that I live in the United States of America.
It's true. What he does every day.
So let's start the show in the most wondrous of ways. Please stand and let us sing the song that I hear in my mind every time DeAndre Yedlin prepares to take a throw-in for Sunderland.
Oh, it's amazing throw-ins. Bethany Perkins.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say
Perkins, everybody. Give a hand for Bethany Perkins. I got to tell you, Rog,
yeah.
We've had the national anthem sung at all of our shows.
Yeah.
That was my very favourite rendition ever. What a voice.
I like the one where they sang the second verse.
Yep.
On the shore dimly seen through the mists of the deep. I'm preparing for my citizenship.
That's lovely. He doesn't like paperwork. He does
Where
not like
bureaucracy. Where the foes haughty host in dread silence. Anyway, America.
Yeah. Okay, Rog.
We meet a dark time for US soccer, let's be honest, guys. We really do. I mean, Guatemala, 95th in the FIFA rankings. The US under-23s are done. Our US women's national team are at war with ourselves.
Yeah.
What can make us feel better, Davey?
Guinness. Guinness, Rog. More Guinness. A bit more Guinness.
I've been looking forward to doing this since the tickets went on sale.
Oh, it's going. I don't pour, man. I'm going straight out the can.
As you say in America, look, I am.
Look, I am. Okay. Okay, Rog. To the football, Rog. To the football.
Oh, to the football.
Love you. Okay, Rog. Our first guest this evening has done for football in this country what Thomas Paine's common sense did for freedom. He's an American soccer pioneer, covering World Cups dating back all the way to the Dark Ages, 1982. These days, he plies his trade as host of ESPN's Outside the Lines, where despite our urging, he's yet to do an investigative piece on just how many teeth Jurgen Klopp actually has. Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the stage the first ever recipient of the Golden Blazer, the landlord of our Brazilian panic room, the general, Mr. Bob Lee.
Thank you.
Hold on.
Oh, Bob Lee.
He looks so good in gold.
He does. Bob Lee.
Some of the kids who did this jacket about 4 years old are now about 13.
Bob Lee.
Hey, Bob Lee. Bob Lee.
He can say anything he wants because he's Bob Lee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bob Lee, what sketches are to Ringo Starr? You are to us. Can I just say, you look resplendent tonight. When I reached out to you to see if you could come here tonight in between busting the NFL for concussion abuse, you emailed me just said, it will be fun. I need to start wearing the blazer for more than just family weddings.
True. You stand out at those affairs.
Yeah.
You gotta. You are famous for so many things.
Yep.
You have at various times been a doppelganger for a young Kenny Loggins.
Yep. A young one.
You are our mentor, yep. Davo and me.
Yep.
You were a Golden Blazer winner, the first. Back in the days when Davo and I smelt the blazer out of liquid gold ourselves.
Yeah.
In a foundry that Davo built in my own bathtub.
Yeah.
Still can't get those stains out.
Yeah.
Wow. Ooh.
But above all, no American has broadcast football on US television longer than you. Back when you started, Sepp Blatter was still a nice guy.
And honest.
Brad Friedel was still a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And even harder to believe, England was still good.
Yeah.
You were a taste-making prophet for football in America, Bob. You were reported widely to have been present at the 1930 semi-final where Argentina opened a can of 6-1 whoop-ass on the USA. They got into the semi-final. Yeah. Why don't you talk more about
it? Yeah, you traveled by boat.
It's all up on the G drive. Check it out.
But of the fan, we asked you tonight to come and join us in our loving bosom.
Yeah.
To process beep, all the thousands of US games that you have broadcast. I thought this would lift my spirit.
Yeah.
When you thousands of times have worked out, you've walked into your walk-in closet, looked at those hundreds of pocket squares you own, and thought, which will match my suit that I wear before broadcasting?
Yeah, what are the top three moments ever in your broadcasting history involving the U.S. men's national team, Bob Lee?
All right, there have been so many.
Yeah.
But so much of what, when you're involved with the U.S. national
team...
Can
I just say one thing?
Yes.
Since video was invented.
Since video and YouTube were invented. Because we have no rights.
Okay.
Reverse order, number three.
Number three.
All right. So much of what we do with the U.S. national team revolves around Mexico.
Ah.
You may have heard of the nation, Roger. Your brow is furrowed. Your demeanor is intensely thoughtful. Yeah. But so much of it revolves around Azteca.
Yeah.
And those games and climbing to that press box. You're already at 7,000 feet of altitude.
Yeah. You're out of breath.
Well, before you even begin to climb up to the box, which is interminable. And then you realize you're up there, and it's open like this, which means as the game progresses, if things don't go to the home team's favor, all sorts of things can shower down upon you.
Yeah.
Keep telling yourself it's beer. Keep telling yourself it's beer.
I hope it's beer.
It's beer.
Doesn't smell like beer.
Budweiser, then.
Yeah. So let's go back. It was in the wake of the Snow Classico. Remember the Snow Classico?
Oh, do I remember it?
It was 3 years ago, 2 weeks ago, in Denver, when I had the snow mullet. The game against Costa Rica with the driving 60, 70-mile-an-hour winds, the snow coming in, the field covered, the United States grinding out a 1-0 victory over a Costa Rican team that took it as a national insult that the game was not abandoned and was continued. And, of course, the United States got the 3 points.
They'd never seen snow.
Exactly. It was in the wake of losing in Honduras in San Pedro Sula. Badly, 2-1, bad late goal. And here was the United States with no points after one match, having to win and winning the Snow Classico. Now we go, we leave Denver, we fly to Mexico City.
No Tim Howard.
Tim Howard had literally broken his back. Oh. He had cracked vertebrae, which meant Brad Guzan was in goal, which meant it was going to be a... Yes. This is back when Villa had a team.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sorry. And so it came to pass that it was... Yes, there was a point, one back there in 1997, but on that evening, a scoreless draw. We were right by the what passes for the luxury boxes at that level, and these were not happy home fans. But it was an important point, and from opening with a loss and that tough Snow Classico victory, now we had the point of goal, the point at Azteca.
You once said to me you would never hang this game on the wall like a Rembrandt, but it taught America the beauty of a 0-0 draw. Yeah.
Exactly.
Different to your next game, Bob.
There we are. Thank you for the prompt. Because all of this was built on the back of a year earlier.
Yeah.
For some reason unknown to God, man, and science, the Mexican Federation decided to invite the United States down to Azteca for a friendly. Now, that's an oxymoron, certainly, between these nations, but it gives you a free chance at altitude to play there, to learn the atmosphere, to get a sense of the altitude, the air, the ambiance, this death-defying structure of Azteca. And on that night, they were also, in the wake of the London Olympics, they were honoring the so-called golden generation of Mexico players. And there was a big show at the half. They had fireworks that were, well...
It wasn't Disney World, what you're trying to say, Bob.
They didn't quite have military precision. So as we were ducking at halftime, as these things were flying past...
They might not have been fireworks.
Yep. In dark. Incoming!
Tim Howard did play that night, as we say, stood on his head for two insane saves in the 84th and 85th minutes, and at the death, in the dying moments of the game, I don't know how Michael Orozco Fiscal, as he was known at the time, a defender, was on his off wing at the opposite post, but there he was.
Let's see it.
Cut back towards Breck Shea. Now he's got a chance to run. It's Shea. Just lost control at the vital moment. Plays it in towards Boyd. And the USA do have the lead. And it's Orozco Fiscal. Can you believe that? Who's poked it over the...
The blow to the national pride, to lose at Azteca to Estados Unidos, it punctured the myth of the stadium.
Wow. And you How did you get out alive?
We waited a while. I'm not kidding. We waited a while. It got ugly.
And we finished your post-match comments under
an umbrella, because down it came. It came beer. It came the pieces beer. Of lime. It came what you hope was beer. And it got ugly. And we finished the match under a large Churchillian umbrella. You'll appreciate that.
Are you ready?
Was number two.
Are you ready, David?
Just about ready for Bob Lee moment number one.
Diora, who plays it deep, Saifi with a header. Howard gratefully claims it. Distribution, brilliant. Landon Donovan, there are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey is denied again. And Donovan has scored! Oh, can you believe this? Go, go, USA! Certainly through. Oh, it's incredible. You could not run.
That guy from the Wells Fargo commercial.
Donovan. I was hosting that with Steve McManaman at our World Cup set in Johannesburg.
McManaman.
About 2 minutes earlier, England had gotten their result. They were through. At that moment, England were leading the group. So Macca, the pressure was off this Brit fellow who was with me. And now all the attention focused there. And when that ball went in, the control room went bat bleep. We did as well. It was insane because it was all there. I mean, we had this, and you've all seen the YouTube videos. I think that was the first example of these viral YouTube videos of everyone sharing their moments together. And it was actually you had to physically step away from the set, Macca and I, take a deep breath, compose yourself, because we got to go on television and make sense out of this. That was transcendent.
You once said to me, as Landon's shot hit the back of the net, we created a lot of new lifelong American soccer fans in that very second.
That endures to this day.
I've just got to tell you, just watching that goal again with you, maybe it's the golden blazer, but it gives me what I've just this week found out medically is known as a nipplegasm.
Yeah.
Where are we now, Bob? We've just survived an international week, which was dark and full of terrors. I've got to say, watching you, and I talked about this on the podcast, watching you broadcast the Guatemala game, when you popped on the screen, I just screamed out on my television, "Cuddle me now, nation's dad! Tell me it'll all be okay!"
I couldn't tell you that at the beginning, because we had emotion, angst, anticipation. We had everything in Columbus except a margin for error. There was no margin for error.
How bad are things right now, I guess, is the question. Tell us, Doctor.
They're not as bad as hiring a plane to overfly Cruz Stadium to call for Klinsmann's firing. They're not as bad as the talk show mentality or the radio sports phone-in mentality, which does not exist in this room, I assure you.
Except for that guy who just said Klinsmann out.
Have his ass thrown out
that
of here,
one.
Would you please?
Yeah.
That was Sunil Gulati. Sunil, thanks for coming,
thanks
mate.
Thanks for coming, Sunil.
He should stay. There might be something else that interests him this evening.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just remembered who it is.
Yes.
Okay, good.
You'll all get this in a little bit, okay. But they. Listen.
We're honoring Sepp Blatter in a minute.
Exactly. It's a results business. You can promise a new style. You can talk about that. At the end of the day, you are as good as your players. You have seen an incremental increase in talent, the talent pool, the size of the pool, but the hex is the hex. You talk to European players, and I've seen these conversations. So guys like Casey and Alexi and Taylor trying to explain to guys like Balak and Gilberto Silva.
And Matt Biasca.
Exactly. Well, yeah. About what it's like. You guys qualify in Europe, you'll get on a train, you'll get on a 90-minute flight. The climate doesn't change. The hour, the clocks don't change. You don't meet a hostile population. When the United States
goes to Stoke.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Millwall.
Yeah.
We do have Kazakhstan.
For a Millwall brick. But it's no... CONCACAF's hex is unique, I think, in the world, and it forges a better team. Just to qualify is an accomplishment.
You can and say, it's getting stronger.
It's
getting stronger, and that's good for the U.S. men's national team that CONCACAF is getting stronger.
Exactly. And so...
Glass half full, glass half empty.
Exactly. So where are we? We're in a position now where the other evening in Columbus when the match started, we were in danger of falling off the table. Now we're in a position where we can easily see the United States qualify for the Hex on the next to last match day and take all the pressure off that match with TNT.
And winning the World Cup, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. Only if Beckerman's in the side.
Thank you. Here's what I want to tell you. There's certain truths in life, even though right now the U.S. men's national team are certain, definitely... given us a rocky roller coaster, there are some truths that Dave-O and I hold sacrosanct.
Yeah.
What we do know, Bob, is that we love and revere you.
Yeah.
You're like a mentor to two grown men who frankly should not need mentors at this age.
Yeah.
You're a role model for thousands more men and women like us across this nation. And with great pride, we've already given you the bloody golden blazer. So we wanted to give you something tonight that would show our appreciation, right, Dave-O? And we thought, Men in Blazers national team jersey.
Oh, my.
It is my great pleasure, Mr. Bob Lee, mentor, the general, our hair hero.
I will treasure this. It will take its a custom spot next to this in the wardrobe, only for special bar mitzvahs,
family weddings,
and the occasional funeral.
It was designed for it was designed for circumcisions, Bob.
Yeah.
I gotta
Don't
be honest.
You call them brisses?
Shalom.
Yeah.
Definitely wear it the next time you see Ian Dark reversed. I think that would be great. Really good.
I would really genuinely love us all, because Dave-O and I love and revere this man. Can we just give the first inaugural Golden Blazer...
Recipient.
The love, the pure, absolute love that he deserves. Ladies and gentlemen, the General, Mr. Bob Lee!
That was General Bob Lee, presented by Mini Cooper.
Yeah. Just to synopsize, America, it's going to be all right. We're still going to win the 2018 World Cup.
Yeah.
That was the least confident woo I've ever heard in my life. You're turning into English people.
Okay, that was Seton Hall's finest, Rog. But our next guest is a proper rock star. A proper rock star, Rog. His band has sold more than 110 million records worldwide.
By the way, he just said his, so it's not Tracy Chapman.
But well before he sat behind a drum kit at sold-out arenas around the globe, he was a child in Denmark, following football and making the occasional pilgrimage to Stamford Bridge in support of his beloved Chelsea.
Thank you.
Master of puppets.
Ladies and gentlemen, we welcome to the stage a 2009 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, a founding member of Metallica. Ahead of Record Store Day, the re-release of Metallica's two classic albums, Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning, the one and only Mr. Lars Ulrich.
All right then, Guinness for everybody, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Lars, willkommen!
Willkommen!
Skal jeg dansk? Begge to. Kan I sige mere på dansk end velkommen?
Jo, skud dit bankkontoførende, så de spikker lige med starten moden.
I kan sige Preben Elkjær. Kan I sige Finn Laudrup, Michael Laudrup?
Michael Laudrup. Jan
Mølby.
Jan Mølby.
For helvede. Okay.
Everyone, thank you for coming.
All right, yeah. Then.
Lars, I am so glad that you are here. Can we just hear it for Lars bloody Ulrich?
Wow.
Oh, Lars.
And everybody's having the Guinness down there with you guys.
Yep.
Wow.
It's just free choice here. Like really freedom cool. of choice, Lars.
It's Americans who love football.
America's amazing.
Love football.
Can you say?
Watch the English Premier League.
And there isn't a TV camera anywhere. That's the best part of it.
No. NBC are here, and they made sure that we didn't have cameras covering this.
Can I say, one of the things I've been working on personally in my own life is to spend more time around rock sex gods like yourself. Okay.
And how's that working out for you so far? Okay, then.
We're honored to have you here.
Well,
you
right
have lived a great American life, a great American life. You moved to Newport Beach, California in 1979.
Close enough, yeah.
You were 16. You wanted to follow in your dad's footsteps. Torben Ulrich. Let's hear it for Torben.
Oh, Torben Ulrich. We love Torben Ulrich.
You know him as the great...
87 years old and still kicking.
Oh, I've been watching YouTube videos of your dad all week, and I genuinely do want to meet him. But he was a great tennis player.
That he was. You played Wimbledon for many years.
You planned to become the next great Dane in tennis, the male Wozniacki. And as a 16-year-old, to the Nick Bollettieri Tennis Academy in Sarasota, Florida. But then you ran into a steamroller, the pride of Buffalo, Jimmy Arias.
Oh, Jimmy Arias,
that's right, yeah.
Very good player.
You said, I realized my ability wasn't enough to be a successful professional and the discipline necessary was not in it for me.
That sounds like something I would say, yeah.
Sounded like you were introduced to beers and girls, Lars.
There's a place just outside of Copenhagen called Christiania. I don't know if anybody, I was introduced to Christiania in 1979. So the people that know what that means, right?
What kind of a tennis player were you? So I was a junior tennis player. I came here to America to play tennis. What kind of a player were you?
My big hero was Guillermo Vilas.
Oh.
And so I...
The thighs on that man. I love men, Roger.
That's why I loved him, because of the thighs.
Oh, the thighs.
I've got to tell you, people often stop me in the street and think I'm G. Vilas.
He was like the coolest. He had long hair and he was kind of...
The headband always
around
the hair.
So when you were in Denmark... You were sort of living in the shadow of Sweden, and so I had to rebel against Bjorn Borg, even though I sort of secretly liked him. But Vilas was like the cool guy.
Vilas was amazing. So you played that kind of a game.
I was ranked in the top 10 in Denmark for a couple of years, and when I was 14, 15, and 16, and then when I moved to Newport Beach in 1980, I wasn't actually ranked in the top 10 on the street that I lived on. So it was really pathetic.
America is pretty humbling to European tennis players.
I don't know if that says more about Denmark or about Southern California, but so the whole tennis thing kind of dissipated and then rock and roll took
over. America is the country where you learn that your second service is crap.
Yeah. Capriati beat me when she was 8. Honestly, when she was 8.
Wow. But following your father to Wimbledon, it allowed you to explore England that took you for the first time. To Stamford Bridge.
That's right.
Chelsea.
1973.
I got to tell you.
Back in the heyday.
I watched Some Kind of Monster, the Metallica documentary. You are so driven, so intense. Saint Anger, the art auction scene for people who've seen it.
I know.
All I could think.
But wait, we were just talking about Chelsea. Wait, hang on.
I'm going to tell you.
Let me just explain something, Lars. There's a long analogy coming that involves Game of Thrones, The Love Boat.
Gotcha.
And probably American politics circa 1947.
I'll hang back.
Let me tell you this. I was trying to watch your movie the night before the US almost were eliminated from the World Cup. I thought, I will watch a movie that will take my mind completely off football. And I watched it. And all I could think of the whole time, it's an amazing 2 hours, 30 minutes.
What a film.
All I could think of is, Lars Ulrich, he is so bloody Chelsea, it's unbelievable.
Let's see.
How Chelsea
You were just
lost.
Sitting there going, Lars Ulrich, Charlie Cook, Lars Ulrich, Charlie Cook, right?
Peter Osgood.
That's right.
How Chelsea, how did you encounter these guys? Why did you wed yourself to Chelsea?
Well, growing up in Denmark in the 70s, there was one television channel. And every Saturday, we had the match piped in from the English First Division. It wasn't called the Premier League at the time. It was the First Division. And that was in the heyday of, you know, Leeds, Stoke, Chelsea, obviously Arsenal, Man
Tottenham,
United. And so, but it was,
yeah.
But it was, you know, Gordon Banks, Billy Bremner, Charlie Cook, Peter Osgood, Bobby Charlton.
Ian Hutchinson, my favorite Chelsea player then.
Alan Ball.
Yeah,
ginger
Alan Ball
hair.
Was. Yeah, good for the gingers.
All those guys. Billy Bremner, Pitbull,
Oh, it was mean.
So those were the golden years for me, and we would just sit around the television glued every Saturday afternoon and watch the match of the week coming in from England.
It was better than anything else on Danish television.
There wasn't
imagine.
Anything else on Danish television, and there was no real, I mean, there wasn't any football coming in from anywhere else. I mean, at that time the Bundesliga or the Dutch First Division or whatever. I mean, it was all about England, and it wasn't
MLS
just,
was yet to be one of the top five leagues in the world.
Right. And it wasn't just actually limited to English football. I mean, it was also, you know, the English music, you know, coming in. We grew up on a steady dose of Sweet and Slade and Status Quo and all that type of stuff.
Status Quo.
But Chelsea were a fantastic club back then. I mean, Charlie Cook, this Scottish character, Bonnie Prince Charlie, the quote about him that I used to love was that when he played on snow, he wouldn't leave any footprints. I mean, he was a he was a character, and he played with Peter Osgood. This is Chelsea fused back when you watched them. Football. And pop culture. It was it was Raquel Welsh was hanging out in the locker room. The Peter Osgood scored his 100th goal. Yeah. He said he walked into the locker room, was like, I'm here, celebrate me. He said no one gave a crap. And he looked around. All his teammates were huddled around Steve McQueen, who was smoking cigarettes in the corner.
Yeah. They were a group of rock stars, Chelsea, at that time. They really were.
Their captain at this era was named Ron Chopper Harris.
Right.
How do you think he got that name?
Right.
It's not. He didn't own a helicopter. That's all I'm saying.
We're not going to talk about Chelsea this season.
Oh, come on.
The campaign can be best summed up as dreams of war, dreams of liars, dreams of dragons fire, and things that will bite. Yeah.
There you go. Okay, then.
I do want to touch upon Denmark for a second. We love Denmark. Kasper Schmeichel, Christian Eriksen. My old favourites. Thomas Gravesen, the Mad Dog, Stig Tofting.
Spurs, right?
Midfield. Stig Tofting. Amazing. Midfielder by day.
Oh,
biker
Stig
gang
Tofting.
Member
I
by
love
night.
Stig Tofting.
The amazing thing I want to ask you about Danish football is that 1984 Euro semi-final out of nowhere.
When they beat, they came and won. They beat everyone. And then in 86 in Mexico, when they made it all the way to the semifinals.
Amazing.
And they were 1-0 ahead
against Spain
up till the second half.
And then they lost.
And then all of a sudden, Spain scored like 19 goals in the first five minutes of the
on
second.
On horseback.
Yeah.
It was that kind of a game.
Metallica were on tour with Ozzy at the time, playing arenas. We were down in Texas.
That's right.
And at that time, you know, pre-ESPN, pre 700 sports channels and all that type of stuff, if you wanted to watch football, you had to go to places that were Hispanic. So you had to go to find, like, Mexican restaurants, Mexican bars or whatever. Yeah. And we had a show in Corpus Christi, Texas. And at, like, 11 o'clock in the morning, me and a few of the bandmates found a local Mexican restaurant and watched Spain, Denmark in the semis. And we were up, for the first 50 minutes, 1-0. And then it all went from there. But at least we
it's like being a Liverpool fan.
And that was in the golden age of Preben Elkjær and Jan Mølby
in those days.
Pronounce that for me, because I always said Jan Mølby.
Mølby.
Okay, wait a minute. Let me try to do it. Mølby.
Mølby. Really like short and flat. Mølby. And
Mølby.
Sound like you're angry. And
Mølby.
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 Jan Mølby.
Jan Mølby.
Back then you had Michael Laudrup, you had Jesper Olsen.
Mikael Laudrup og Jesper Olsen.
You had four players. Four players.
And Frank Arnesen from PSV.
Frank Arnesen. Yeah.
Søren Lerby.
What I'm fascinated by is your fans, the Rolligans.
Yeah, the Rolligans,
From the Danish word for calm and mild-mannered.
Yeah.
They're the most joyous fans I've ever encountered.
But it was the opposite of the obviously of the day, of the English.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask you about.
Okay, I'm sorry if I beat you to it.
No. There's an equation in my life growing up with Davo in England.
Yeah.
Beer plus football fan equal people who like the taste of their own blood in their mouths.
Yeah.
You guys, in your DNA, what is it about Danish people that makes you such happy drunks?
You know what? Maybe we got all of that out of our systems with the Vikings 1,000 years
yes.
before.
You pillaged. Right. You pillaged everyone.
Yeah, including up north in England, right, for a few years.
Yeah, my middle name is Peterson.
The monkey
exactly.
on the beach,
I got
right?
done. My people got done. Yeah,
the monkey on the beach and all that, right?
Yeah, my people got done. Done by the Danes.
So what you're saying is success is very mellowing.
Exactly. Exactly.
But the Danish supporters are obviously known for being super calm and cool and wearing, you know, the Danish red flag as makeup on their faces and wearing these silly hats.
Viking helmets. They wear a few Viking helmets.
An occasional Viking helmet.
Viking helmets, sorry.
Happy people.
Viking.
You're right.
Yeah. You seem to like yourselves, which is something I find totally befuddling.
Yeah. Well,
there aren't many of us, so we have to stick up not only for each other, but for ourselves. You know, there's only 5 million of us.
One of the things I love about you is that to find success 30 years ago, insert World War One poetry here and some allusions and stuff. Now back to you. You head off to San Francisco. You want to play metal. You're in Los Angeles. Hair metal ruled Los Angeles.
That it did, yes.
Dokken, Rat.
Yes, Motley Crue.
Oh,
yep.
They ruled, dude.
That they did.
But you were like, hair.
Yeah.
Hair, it's overrated. Well,
you were like, you found this innovative metal sound in the Bay Area, Southern California, fashion-conscious glam, like the Tottenham Hotspur. You were like, you were like high-speed, gritty sound. You were more Stoke City.
Stoke City.
And my question is really for you, I guess, about hair. Its importance to men in rock, because your story, we're seeing this maturing Lars Ulrich. You had it, you lost it, you toyed with a mullet for a little period.
Yeah.
And then you accepted.
But listen, my mullet was second to James Hetfield. May I please add fast here? Thank you.
Yes, I keep asking. I asked my barber for a James Hetfield mullet. This is what I get.
That was like Billy Cyrus territory. Trust me.
The great day, Cyrus. You accepted the bull truth. I want to ask you about hair. In metal, it seems so key. Is it possible? I'm asking for a friend.
Can I just say something? Even by Roger's standards, this is the longest wind-up to a question ever.
It's only five pages.
Okay.
Is it possible to rock as a bald? Please tell me, Lars Ulrich.
Phil Collins? No. No. That was too easy.
Oh, my God. I'm going to get a hair transplant on Monday.
I would like to think that we at least still give it our best shot. So I would say the answer is yes. But I will say that back in LA in the early 80s when we made a sort of hasty exit up to San Francisco, I mean, the bands that were inspiring to us and that were motivating us were obviously British bands like Motorhead, Iron Maiden, Saxon. You know, even
Saxon.
There's a real British band.
I know.
From Barnsley.
That must really make the Vikings laugh. Because it's like they lost to your people.
Right.
They're in Barnsley and they still call themselves Saxon.
That's right. So obviously all these bands were the polar opposite and the antithesis to what was going on in LA with Motley Crue and Dokken and Rat and all those. So, you know, we spent 2 years in LA emulating those bands, not washing, and ended up in San Francisco in 1983, and have been proud to call San Francisco home ever since.
Wow, fantastic!
The most European-minded city in North America. Halt kæft! Halt kæft! Jan Mølby.
You become one of the greatest drummers of all time, but I love you for your acting. You stole Series One of Billions. I got to tell you.
Yes.
And I spoke to the co-creator, Brian Koppelman, this morning. He used to be the A&R man at Elektra
That's
in his
right.
20s.
Yeah. That's right.
And he told me one thing you need to know about Lars is that in the olden days...
We love Billions.
He
We're
said,
insane about it, actually. He said, We're insane he, about
he,
Billions.
He told me Lars's motto was, and I love this, I don't have any tattoos, but if I do, I might get this tattooed on my person. If you want to hang out with me, You have to be ready to hang out with me till 6 in the morning. He told me scenes like Cameron Crowe movies ensued. And I don't know if you're aware of the fat laws, but let me enlighten you.
This is like I'm getting my wiki read back to me, right? That's basically what this is, right? And now, come on our show and we'll read you your Wikipedia. Okay.
You can't trust Wikipedia. You've got to go to Brian Kopperman. I don't know if you know this, Lars, but podcasters don't get laid very much. So you've lived the life many out here wish they lived as teens before they got jammed into soulless cubicles and all that crap. What is the greatest life lesson you can impart on us from your life experiences, Lars?
When I came to America, the whole kind of thing about goals, everybody's like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, I'm going to do this. It's like, how about you just live and enjoy and be in the moment and so not...
There was no Metallica PowerPoint, is what you're saying.
None of that. No, we were just in the moment. And when we started the band, we just wanted to be like, you know, like a English band, you know, playing down at the local pub on a Saturday night type of thing. We had no sort of visions of grandeur and arenas and spectacle and all that stuff. We just wanted to, you know, play and sweat and drink and do all the stuff that you guys are doing here.
Wow.
And then,
except we're still in the pub.
Right, exactly. That's what we wanted to do. And then slowly it sort of started evolving from there. But it was never like a goal-oriented thing about making Metallica the biggest thing in the world. And I'm happy the fact that we, you know, unlike, say, and obviously nothing against them, but like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Guns N' Roses, a lot of these bands that put their first records out and sold like 10 million copies of their first record, we put our records out and subsequent, every record was a little bigger than the last one. So we didn't really become super huge till, I guess, the fourth or the fifth record. So we had more of a kind of a European rise in popularity, which was really good for the mental health.
Yeah.
And so I'm happy about everything, the way it played out, and that it was something that was a gradual rather than overnight. So there's not anything about the whole Metallica thing I would change.
And you've remembered who you are, because it's Record Store Day.
That's
April
right.
16th. That's Metallica, right. This year's record ambassadors. Stores, yeah. Tell young America what it is that is emotively making you rally to the cause.
Well, independent record stores have always been a place of gathering and a place of inspiration. When I was a kid growing up in Copenhagen, going to the record store 2 or 3 times a week, that was like the highlight of my week.
You'd go in and do that,
but there was also another thing you could do in record stores, was you could take a record, could go hand it to the clerk, and then you could stand on a counter and you could listen to it with headphones on.
It's a Deep Purple.
And that's right. And you would stand there and you would look at the sleeve. And if you liked it, you'd buy it and take it home, and it was super cool. So record stores have always been, an independent record scene has always been a big part of who Metallica is. So we were asked to be the ambassadors this year. We're putting out 2 re-releases. Our first 2 records, Kill 'Em All and Ride the Lightning, are coming out next Saturday. And we are playing a show in a record store in Berkeley, California, that's about half the size of the stage. That's the whole size of the store on Saturday. So we're looking forward to that.
That's
going to be fun.
Never forget where you're from.
Right back to what we talked about, with just playing and having fun and sweating and doing all that in a small, confined space.
Final question. What is it like to ride the lightning? it's a very Danish... That's a very Danish concept. Riding the lightning.
Probably not particularly pleasant would be my guess.
It's better than riding a bus, I would imagine.
Or maybe faster. Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation for another time.
Okay, good. We'll do that on the next podcast, on the TV show. Ladies and gentlemen, a great new American, a great Dane, Mr. Lars Ulrich!
Thank you.
Okay, Rog, we're getting closer. I've remembered now who's getting the Golden Blazer. Wow. But one more guest first. Lars isn't the only one here tonight with a hit song. In the summer of 2014, when we covered the World Cup in Rio, the crap part of Brazil, our next guest, an ESPN statistician, he had a certified club banger of his own. It's a song sure to leave your nipples tingling.
And it goes a little something like this.
Pull car blows your mind. I said pull car blows your mind.
I said pull car blows your mind. I said pull car blows your mind. Pull
car blows your mind.
The one and only pull car.
Can I just say, I always knew someday Metallica would open for me.
If you have never been in a studio with Paul Carr, let me just tell you, he's like Russell Crowe in Beautiful Mind. He just writes numbers on windows.
Some of his best friends are numbers, Rod.
38 and I are having a good time right now.
Paul Carr, you have three shots at blowing our collective mind.
Yeah.
If Paul Carr blows your mind with one of these three stats, what do you need to do? Oh.
Yeah, I said, yeah, we need a mechanism for this, Rog. We say wow when Paul Carr blows our mind. But let's face it, he doesn't always blow our mind as much with some stats as he does with others. So we need three different levels of wow. So let's do the first wow if Paul Carr gives us out of three a grade one mind blow. It would be sort of be a wow. Wow. How about a grade two level wow? It would be a wow. Wow. And then how about a grade three level wow? Wow. Okay. So you're on the wow grading system now,
okay.
Paul.
All right.
Blow our minds.
It's out of our hands, PK.
Number one.
All right. So you were talking with Bob Lee about how the US was in trouble.
Yeah.
Didn't know what was gonna happen going into that Tuesday game in Columbus.
We didn't.
This is why everyone was so concerned going into that game.
Okay.
Because the FIFA rankings, take them for what they will, but they're something. They began back in 1992. In 25 years of the FIFA rankings, that Friday loss, 2-0 at Guatemala, was the first time any team ranked outside the top 70 had beaten the U.S. by two goals.
Wow. I think that's a level two. Maybe a one and a half. But it's a little negative about the US. We've got to factor that in, so I'll give it a two.
I've got a favor to ask you.
Okay.
Paul.
Yes.
Can you stop making up such bad stats about the US men's national team?
I would love to.
I've got a theory that the more positive you are in your stat creation,
yeah,
I think the team would play a lot better.
All right.
Paul Carr, fact number two.
We're going to get a little at next level on you here.
Okay.
Expected goals is a stat that basically says, here's how many goals the team should have scored on average, given the shots that they took.
Yep.
So an up-close shot is worth more than a shot from 35 yards, et cetera. So you can tell by this which teams are kind of underachieving.
Explain that again, because you lost me.
Okay.
And I know I am below the level of intelligence of everybody here, but I'm just trying to catch up.
Just hit us with a bloody stat,
okay.
Paul. I'm ready. I'm braced.
Okay.
All right, so here's an example. So based on expected goals.
Yeah.
The third most underachieving team in the Premier League this year is Aston Villa. They've scored seven goals less than they're expected to, given the shots that they've taken.
Okay.
That makes sense.
America
only
says
seven.
Who?
Yeah.
But they do have Agbonlahore.
Oh, okay. By the way, there's one Aston Villa fan over
word.
There.
He's here.
He was like, what?
Hey.
West Ham, sorry.
West Ham, sorry.
Fair enough.
Sorry.
That's not the Aston Villa season.
It's
you've
an
experienced.
Easy claret and blue mistake.
Yeah.
Okay.
You spelled Paille wrong.
Okay, sure.
They screwed up.
So your second worst team in the Premier League, according to expected goals, the biggest underachiever is Watford. They've scored eight goals below their expected total this year.
Where's this going, Paul?
Okay.
The biggest underachiever in the Premier League this season, according to expected goals, with 12 goals below their projected total, Arsenal.
Wow. That's a level three, wow.
I like that stat.
Explain that. So that means that Arsenal...
Arsenal's taking really good shots and they're not scoring enough.
It really was Arsenal's title to lose.
It really was.
Can I just tell you something for Arsenal fans in the audience? You're number one.
Yeah.
Number one underachiever.
That's something.
No trophy.
Finally, Paul, the final stat that is going to blow our mind somewhere between a wow and a wow.
Do better, Paul. John Skipper is listening to this.
You know
me. There's John Skipper.
Thank you, sir.
He's a Tottenham fan.
He's a Tottenham fan.
So you get a lot of soccer games decided by one goal. So a toe,
Leicester,
a finger, a goalpost can make the difference.
Yeah.
So they can often decide the course of a season, of a championship. This year in the Premier League, third place Arsenal, 6-4 in one goal games. Second place Tottenham, 6-4 in one goal games. The team with the best record in the league in one goal games this season, with four more wins than any other team, first place Leicester City, 14-2 in one goal games.
Wow! Come on, 14-2. Is a wow. I know we would have thought Leicester, but 14-2, that's numbers.
Can I just ask one question? Numbers. How many Arsenal fans are there in here tonight? No. How many Tottenham fans are in here tonight? How many Leicester City fans are in here tonight? How many Bournemouth fans are there in here tonight?
I think the same person screamed four times there. Just loves the Premier League. Loves everyone. Loves everyone.
And can I be honest, really the biggest mind-blowing thing is Leicester's in first place.
Leicester is in first place. That is the most mind-blowing thing. Ladies and gentlemen, Paul Carr!
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Wonderful.
Okay, Rog. Now
my mind's blown. I can't.
Well, no, we're really going to blow your mind now. Now the reason we're all here tonight: the presentation of the Golden Blazer. It is a gift we give to an individual who has left an indelible mark on the sport we love, in the country we love. This year, when we conclaved, Rog, with the first two winners, Bob Lee and Julie Foudy, Super Julie Foudy, we reflected on what a remarkable year it has been for football in this country. The US women won the World Cup. Yeah. Young Jordan Morris scored his first goal for the Von Trapps. Yeah. And NBC continued to allow bald men on television. In a year like this, we knew we needed a big winner.
So big, in fact, that their security detail precluded us from being in their presence tonight. But last week, while Davo was at Stamford Bridge interviewing for the Chelsea managerial job...
I didn't get it.
I travelled, you might yet will... I travelled to Washington, D.C. to interview the winner and officially present the 2016 Golden Blazer.
Yes.
Behold the awarding of this year's Blazer of Gold. Our guest today is a bona fide American hero, whose name will be etched in the annals of history alongside Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., and Tony Meola. Last year, from these very shores, this person sent shockwaves around the globe, accomplishing a feat of the unexpected, which for me was up there with the US's triumph over England at the 1950 World Cup. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a genuine honour to present to you the great American who took down Sepp Blatter, the woman the world calls the FIFA hunter, the 83rd Attorney General of these United States of America, the one and only Ms. Loretta Lynch.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Oh, thank you for joining us here today. Everything I know about the Justice Department, I've learned by watching Paul Giamatti in Billions. But when I look at your life and your career arc, I just marvel that the person who brought down FIFA and changed world football forever was born in Greensboro, North Carolina,
yes,
the daughter of a fourth-generation Baptist minister and a soft-spoken librarian. Then I dig into your story, Ms. Lynch. The more I read about you, the more I come to appreciate two crucial biographical details that made me realize that you were born
for the task of FIFA fighting. Your football roots, they run deep. Your first encounter with football, fourth grade,
yes.
Latewood Elementary School.
Yes,
I heard
indeed.
You had mad skills.
I'm not sure how mad they were. I think we were all running all over the field. But as a kid, I loved soccer. It is one of the best sports available to every kid. And I'm tremendously happy to see it growing in popularity here in the United States.
Seth Blatter watches our show. He likes our wig work. What message do you have for him if he's watching?
I don't have a specific message for Mr. Blatter. My message really is to anyone who's involved in the great sport of football. As I've said before, the reform agenda is one that we hope will move forward, and we hope that FIFA as an entity can get back to its pure goal and its pure roots of supporting this sport, supporting the children who want to play and grow and advance, and that anyone who seeks to take FIFA back to the days of cronyism and bribery is living in the past and should not be part of FIFA's future.
Oh, that is poetry to the ears of every true world football fan. Oh, now the moment I've been waiting for since May the 27th, when you stood up and slayed FIFA. This blazer stands for an American who has grown the game we love in the country we love. This is the closest I'm ever going to get to being Jim Nantz in the Butler cabin as I present this to you. This year, it was a unanimous vote. It had to be you. So it's with great pleasure that I bestow upon you Attorney General Loretta Lynch, the Men in Blazers Golden Blazer. There should be little angels singing.
Thank you so much. I am so proud and honored to receive this on behalf of your show and all the fans and all the people who love football and who want this game to be the beautiful sport that it is. I thank you, and I accept this on behalf of everyone at the Department of Justice who's worked so hard on this case.
Oh, I've got two things to say. Number one, we shouldn't have left the tag in it. And number two, America.
Tell you, there have been several times in the history of Men in Blazers when Roger's told me what his idea is. And I've said, oh yeah, Roger, that sounds like a really good idea. And I've turned to the team and I've just said, it's never gonna happen. Amazingly, she said yes. Roger, you've never looked so big next to her. Tell us about a woman of grace, a woman of class, a moment that changed your life, I think.
It's the first dream I've ever had that I've captured live on video. What a woman. You meet so many of your heroes in life and find out that they have clay feet. And let me assure you, tonight, America, Loretta Lynch has feet size 4.
Beautiful, beautiful feet.
They're made of gold. And they have little diamonds, fair trade diamonds, as toenails. And I just want to say, meeting her and spending the afternoon with her and producer JW and producer Jen Simons last week, I thought I loved America. It made me love America all the more. She is a remarkable woman. Can we give her one more round of USA applause? USA! 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 We did do a long interview. We'll release the whole thing as a podcast in the week. She is truly, truly, and I'm a horrible person and I'm very cynical. She's a remarkable human being. And I adore her, and she made me love America. And when I do get my citizenship, I want her to swear me in.
He came back and immediately started on the paperwork again. You did? Okay, we needed to make up for her absence by inviting a British hero and a true hero for American soccer onto this stage tonight. We regard this man as right up there with Churchill, Larkin, and Sporty Spice. He fled the Midlands. That's basically another way of saying up north. For a broadcasting career that's included stops in Seattle and Gantries around the United Kingdom. We've all fallen under the spell of his poetic lyricism. It is, after all, the soundtrack to every American soccer fan Saturday and Sunday morning. Let's take a look.
Fuchs, who is the left back, who's galloping down the right-hand side, looking for his options, and he slides it through. Jamie Vardy, is this the moment? History is made! Jamie Vardy has scored in 11 consecutive Premier League games. Hands on hips, the teapot for Alan Pardew. Party time at Stamford Bridge. Party time at Stamford Bridge. Party time at Stamford Bridge. Bit of a flame-haired face-off in the centre of the park, isn't it, with Reid and Colback?
Only you could say that, Arlo.
Being of a reddish hue myself. But it's retrieved by Monreal. It's a good cross. Back in, the header comes in. It's the equaliser for Giroud. The meaty French forehead of Olivier Giroud has probably earned Arsenal a point.
Ladies and gentlemen, the person who may be the Premier League's head scriptwriter, the man who's a bit of a ginger himself, the one and only Mr. Arlo White!
He's got legs!
He's got a whole body!
It's getting weirder by the day.
Oh. Yeah, you have now no idea how weird it's going to get.
Oh, like, what?
Very little
it?
Idea.
What is that aftershave you're wearing?
I'll tell you, it smells amazing.
Like how I imagine Robbie Musto looks. It's amazing. What is it?
It's Prada, darling.
Oh.
Sponsored.
I didn't know they made an aftershave called Darling.
Let me jump right in with a question everyone in America wants the answer to. You've been doing Rebecca Lowe's job for an entire week now. Are you pregnant yet?
It's Rob Lowe's baby.
No. You don't get you get pregnant only from contact for Kyle Martino. I gotta say, potency oozes out of that man's pores. Yeah. Welcome back to America.
Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody. Fantastic to be here. Thank you.
Oh, we always say that we love America more than Kid Rock loves America. But I've got to tell you, you might love it even more than we do.
Yeah, you love America.
I do love America.
At Horatio Gates levels, history fans. One of my favourite facts from your forthcoming biography.
What's it called?
And they said Leicester would never win the league. Adventures of a King Ginger in the broadcast industry.
It's catchy.
Is catchy.
Is that you and I... We both love properly.
This is amazing,
isn't it? Who do we love? We love the Chicago.
We do.
We love the Chicago Bears.
Go Bears.
I want to take you back like George... How would George Michael do it, David?
Chicago.
I want to take you back. August 16th, 1986.
Dateline.
I went there to my very first, and I just watched Ferris Bueller, and I'm like, I've got to go to Chicago. I went there, and I went to my first ever NFL game. It was a crappy... insignificant preseason game against the Gary Hogaboom Indianapolis Colts. Yeah. Gary Hogaboom's here tonight. Yeah. 38-21, the Bears won.
Yeah.
I was there,
and
so was...
You were at the same game?
Yes!
No!
I've told you that for 5 years and you've only...
Honestly!
Yes!
I knew you both liked the Bears.
That was the first preseason game back in Chicago for the 85 Bears. Which dates us slightly, doesn't it? It was the...
Makes us seem younger than we actually are.
We thought it was the start of the Mike Tomczak era.
Yes, yeah.
The greatest quarterback ever to walk the planet. Didn't quite work out. But we had tickets. That's my Aunt Kath, who in 1959, age 17, left Leicester. I mean, who in their right mind leaves Leicester? But she decided that there was a greater life to be
everyone
had in the United
States.
I've got quite a long list here, actually.
Apart from Riyad Mahrez, N'Golo Kante, Jamie Vardy, Danny Drinkwater. Apart from those guys.
We're about to find out.
She left Leicester.
She left Leicester. She married an American GI in 1959, and she's still in Chicago now, in her 70s. She remarried an Irish-American. She disappeared off the face of the planet back in the 50s and then resurfaced and came over to Leicester on her honeymoon with my uncle Bill.
And you thought, free holiday.
I'm thinking, be the best cousin, be the best behaved cousin, and I was the one that got the trip. So at least they paid for me at age 13 to take a flight on my own on British Airways, and we landed in Chicago, and this was, and I just got into NFL, and we had tickets by the tunnel, so the where the Bears were coming in and out from their warm-ups.
We love tunnel.
This is Walter Payton.
This is pre-Joe Hart tunnel.
Oh, love tunnel.
And pre-nightclub tunnel at the King Power. Yeah. And I got a high five from...
love that nightclub. Best nightclub in the Midlands.
Great nightclub. Yeah. Got a high five from Walter Payton. I mean, that day is imprinted on my brain, seared into my memory, and sealed the deal that one day I was going to go and live in America.
Because he knew your aunt was married to Robbie Keane.
you once wrote to me, just think how ordinary a preseason game against the Colts that was. But to all two members of the crowd that night, you and me. And I've got to tell you, I only wish we'd met all, like, at the hot dog stand. And I wonder, I was 15.
You had a mullet then too.
I wonder, I was bald already. And I wonder.
It is mined.
I wonder, definitely, half empty. I wonder, would we have like locked eyes, just nodded and thought, one day you and I will dedicate ourselves to growing the game we love in the country we love. Or would we have just shrugged, tried to buy an underage Budweiser, and then just settle for a cheese dog?
Probably the latter at that stage.
Cheese dogs.
I returned in 91, actually, and I did get a fake ID. I was a Swedish exchange student for...
Really?
For 6 months, yeah.
Yeah,
it worked. Lars Ulrich. It worked on Rush Street.
We all had that era in our life.
We've got to say, this man, Arlo White, he has been killing it this week in studio. You like being the methadone to ease withdrawal after Rebecca Lowe's absence.
She is extraordinary
Can we hear it for Rebecca Lowe? Yeah.
Mercersburg Academy's finest!
My respect, which was already up here for her, has tripled as a result of doing the show.
Yeah.
It's not an easy show to do.
Yeah, I know.
It's great fun.
Kyle is so difficult.
But how did you experience it? I mean, it requires a whole different set of skills than you've developed up there in the gantry.
The gantry.
For a start, I arrived last Tuesday, and NBC really looked after me, and they said to me, do you want to stay in Stamford, Connecticut, or do you want to stay in the city?
Hard one.
Let me ponder that one for a moment. Having lived in Stamford, no offence to Stamford. It was good, but it's it's no New York City.
You replied, which one of those two is Cagney and Lacey shot in?
So I'm in the city, I'm at the hotel, and I've managed to sleep perfectly well all week, and this whole thing has been 5 months in the making. And I've gone through different phases of blind panic, acceptance, all that sort of stuff, as I anticipate filling the great Rebecca's
shoes.
Those
are the seven stages of grief,
darling. Friday night, I know I've got to be up at 3:15, and I go to bed at 9 o'clock. And for some reason, I'm looking back, this is the mistake I made, I turned the aircon unit off. So all I'm hearing, as my head hits the pillow, I've taken two Advil PM, I'm prepared. All I'm hearing is beep, beep, woo, woo, hey buddy, what's going on here? And I couldn't sleep. Yeah. I got to, and at one point I'm thinking,
so English taxi drivers.
Okay. So I think I'm actually formulating a plan in my mind that I'm going through the night and I'm going to cover for Rebecca with no sleep. But eventually I managed to get 3 hours.
Pretty good.
But the first day, there is a mixture of nerves. It is a very different discipline. Lots of counts, lots of get in, get out, tight questions. The pictures tell the story.
It's a very different skill.
Yeah.
It's very different than what you do in game.
It is. And Lee Dixon's not punching me three times an hour whilst I'm at work. So he's all elbows.
How hard is it to listen to the panelists and work out your next question while you're being aware of the break in your ear?
No, it's not. It's not hard. I've got plenty of experience of doing that sort of stuff. And we've generally watched the game together anyway. It's really interesting to see the dynamic. Musto paces around the studio, likes to watch one game, doesn't like to necessarily be interrupted, but then he'll turn around and just have a stream of consciousness. Kyle retires to the Match of the Day 2 set, which is already there, or Match of the Day set, which is now called Kyle's Lounge, leather sofas. Yeah. He sits there, you know, socially active, social media activity. So they're very different in the way they do it. But we're generally speaking about the games. You kind of know what they feel about certain games before you go
How
on.
How different is Kyle to the guy? On TV, he's so nice, but in real life, he's a lot darker, right?
borderline evil, Rog, I'd say.
Yeah.
What pearls of broadcasting did Rebecca Lowe pass on to you? She told me that there was a very important rule that she told you.
Really? Did she? Yeah. We had contacts on Friday night. I can't remember.
We've experienced tonight. We've experienced the long lead up. We've experienced the question to which there's no answer to. And we've now experienced my third favourite is where Rod sets you up for the thing he wants you to say, which you can't remember what it is.
Which we haven't discussed at all.
And then you're the idiot because you don't know the answer to the thing that he's got written down on his card.
What is it, Rod?
Have a stash of black bean brownies under your desk. Robbie Earle says that they smell like feet. She says that is that's a lesson of good broadcasting.
Oh. Right.
We've got to talk about the football.
We love the football.
Leicester City.
Yeah, for the record.
Leicester City. Okay, just so you know, you guys are the only supporters of Leicester City here. No one on this stage
Very impartial, very
I'm
impartial.
Actually, we're 3 years into this thing now, and I'm still trying to pick a team. I've not decided yet.
The sorting hat has not yet chosen you for a Premier League team.
You and I communicate a lot during the season.
Yeah.
After the loss to Liverpool in December, you wrote to me and you said, it was nice while it lasted. After the loss to Arsenal.
Playing it down. Yep.
You told me, well, we've had great memories. Arlo, you can't kid a kid up. Leicester are 7 points ahead of the field right now.
Yeah.
For context, Bayern, 5 points ahead in the Bundesliga. Barca's La Liga lead, 6 points. Is it over?
This has been done to me so many times, by the way. Anyway, this year it's your turn.
Right.
Take it.
Right. Well, for a start, it's clear that I am from the city of Leicester. I've been desperately trying to cover it up all this time, and reasonable success until I appear on the Men in Blazers podcast.
Yeah. And we play the Return of the Mac as your lead-in music.
I thought it was okay after 10 years at the BBC, where you don't give out your team, you just never nail your colours to the mast. Going to Seattle and wanting to connect with a fan base over there, Leicester were crap in the championship. I was working in MLS. What the hell? I came out as a follower of Leicester City. Yeah. So who would have thought 3 years later?
You wouldn't do well under torture, would you?
No, I wouldn't. What was the question, Rog?
Would you do well under torture? Yeah. Is it over?
No, it's not. Of course it's not. It can't be this straightforward for a club like Leicester City to win the Premier League, can it? It just can't. There have to be twists in the tail. One thing I would say, and I can see a Spurs shirt down at the front, I've heard the odd call of Yid Army since you started. Spurs are terrific, brilliant side. What they have done is missed a couple of opportunities. And there was the time when Leicester played West Brom. I was at the game, not covering it. We were doing a game at Anfield against Man City, Liverpool Man City the night after.
Yeah, you were there as an impartial observer.
I was there as an impartial...
As a representative of the United Nations.
I'd heard good things, just seeing if I picked that them as a team.
You like Eagles.
Came away huge West Brom fan. Huge West Brom fan.
They play such attractive football.
They do. And they drew 2-2. They played well. They hit the bar. But again, coming away thinking, well, the dream's probably over now because Spurs are going to win at West Ham the next night. They're going to take the lead in the Premier League. If they don't do it then, they'll win the North London Derby. Then they're going to take the lead. And they did neither. They won. They lost against West Ham and they drew against Arsenal.
Yeah.
And then so you're thinking, well, no one... If you remember Newcastle, Blackburn in the 90s, when Sir Alex Ferguson's United would just chew up the lead relentlessly to the end of the season, no one's doing that to Leicester. So then the latest opportunity was at Anfield on Saturday against Liverpool, and yet they played well. It was a great game of football. But it was a point and not three. So instead of Leicester kicking off the next day only with a two-point lead, it was a four-point lead. So no one, even Spurs at the moment, are putting the pressure on. But it's got to come from somewhere at some point.
And there are still 6 games left.
Yeah.
Still some very tough fixtures for Leicester.
Yeah, but Leicester kick off before Spurs for the next 4 weeks. So Spurs could be kicking
off. It's like
being
first off the tee in match play.
Yeah. And can you imagine being a Spurs player And if Leicester win at Sunderland, for example, on Sunday, then Spurs kick off against Man U. Tough game, obviously, you know, at home. But what if they're... Sunderland's going to be a tough game too, exactly. But what if they're 10 points clear? Then if, as a Spurs play, you've got to win this game against Man United just to be 7 points behind with five games to go. So that's the opportunity Leicester have here.
As an impartial commentator, will you be commentating topless if you are 10 points clear?
Gary Lineker has promised to do Match of the Day in England in his pants.
Yeah, bottomless.
Underpants. He said it in September, I think, or October, and it was all a bit of a joke, and now he's going to have to go through. Well, he might have to go through with it.
has it almost become, like, anticlimactic?
What, the show? I'll try my best. No, it could never be anticlimactic. Could it? For Leicester fans? No. No. I mean, but it hasn't happened. So until it does, there's going to be angst, neurosis, and this sense that the wheels are going to come off in spectacular fashion at some stage.
Two questions. Was there anything last season that led you to believe this was going to happen? And second question, when Claudio Ranieri was announced as Leicester manager...
Yeah.
At the beginning of the season,
what did you think? I mean, I was as underwhelmed as most people. I just didn't tweet it. So I'm not on record, I suppose. No, did I see anything last season? I thought that Leicester had a chance to stay up because they weren't getting thrashed. They weren't going to Man United. So, like, Villa this year, just no good, are they? I mean, they're getting beat 4-0, 5-0, 6-0.
Feel terrible for their fans.
Absolutely. Yeah, great ground. Going to miss going to that ground. I've always had a soft spot for Aston Villa. I'm from the Midlands, etc.
Yeah, up north.
Yeah, up north. Or according to those up north, down south.
Yeah, down south. Yeah.
But Leicester were losing 2-1, 3-2. The week before the Great Escape started, they lost 4-3 at Spurs. So did I think they could survive? Yes, but it was going to take something pretty magnificent, which then happened. But did we think this was going to happen? Absolutely not. It's just ridiculous what's going on. It is ridiculous.
Completely unconnected to Leicester's joy and just this unparalleled success and this dream of dreams coming true. Does being a commentator ruin your ability to enjoy football as a viewer? Do you, like, sit down and watch games that you're not commenting on and just find your mouth involuntarily opening and just be like, Vardy, Tamares? do you enjoy watching football for fun, or is it all work for you? Are you just a commentating automaton?
I can still watch a game and enjoy it. You tend to commentate in your own mind sometimes, just watching the Champions League in the hotel room today. Yeah, you do. And it's a bit annoying, actually, to be honest. I'd rather that didn't happen.
Fabian Delph.
Sometimes Lee Dixon answers, sometimes he's not. Yeah, he's your imaginary friend. Yeah.
Depends if I'm taking my medication or not.
His jokes are better in Arlo's mind.
What I really want to know is, there's one word as commentators that you have told us from the very beginning that you are not allowed to use while commentating. What is that one?
I used it on Morning Joe. Did you notice on Monday morning?
I kept telling you. I used it four times before.
It doesn't
count
if it's before 8 a.m. New rule.
Yeah. That's vodka.
Yeah. What is the word? What is the word?
What is the word?
Unbelievable.
So why?
Merriam-Webster definition: difficult or impossible to believe. Of course, David knows it's from the Old English Belfian, to believe.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. When Wes Morgan...
Big Wes.
...lifts up the Premier League trophy at the Stamford Bridge on the last day of the season...
How was he even in the box for that header? Anyway, sorry, digress. What's he doing there? Anyway, I love it.
And all the Leicester City fans do that kind of, like, football dance that all footballers do. What is it, David? And I'm, like, incredibly worried because I don't know if Leicester's calibre of footballers know how you're meant to do that dance.
Yeah.
Do you not believe that is the only word that should be Arlo White on your lips when that trophy is lifted up? Unbelievable.
Maybe that's the time to bring it out, Rog, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe the planets will align to such a degree, and this whole journey was meant for that word to be used at that moment. Who knows?
We really genuinely love our employers at NBC Sports, and not because they're our employers. We love them because what they've done for the game we love in the country we love. We just love what they've done for this game. Mm. Love it.
I agree with that.
But amongst professional American sports broadcasters or sports broadcasters globally, why is it that you can't say unbelievable? What is the rationale for not being able to say that word?
Well, to be honest, it is a bit of a joke. It's our executive producer, Pierre Moussa, who is terrific, and he works 20 hours a day. If I send him an email that
on
arrives...
On a light day. On a light day.
If I send him an email that arrives in his inbox at 4 a.m. Eastern, I get a reply by 10 past.
Wow, it is
extraordinary. We have conference calls about conference calls. I've never seen an attention to detail like it. It is borderline barely believable. So he said it as a joke, because his view is, if it's unbelievable, then it didn't just happen.
Yeah.
It can't have just happened. That dictionary definition suggests slightly differently, doesn't it? So
yeah, the old English language to believe, Belfian.
So I wouldn't be fired if I did say it, but I'm maybe just waiting for that moment.
Well, although we know, one thing we know about you, you don't care about Leicester City whatsoever.
Not really.
You are objective.
Yeah.
But Jamie Vardy, Claudio Ranieri, N'Golo Kante, Riyad Mahrez, Dave and I often think, if they experienced their exquisite, heroic season back in the Middle Ages, where Dave and I lived most of our lives.
Yeah.
Ballads, Dave-o.
Ballads. I love ballads.
Ballads would have been written about this team. And call us old-fashioned and middle-aged, but we still live very much in the Middle Ages, when England was still great.
Yeah.
It's where we love the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
David, we got to put that right tonight,
yeah,
mate.
Yeah, we want to close the night.
In your honour, Arlo White.
We want to close the night in your honour, Arlo, with a musical performance. It's from a local singer / songwriter and GFOP who won going away, I should say. Rather like Lady Chairman in the first race at Santa Anita on Sunday. Won our BlazerCon song contest back in November. He smashed it at BlazerCon, so we had to have him back this evening, here to perform his original song, Chat Get Banged. Brooklyn's own Ben Clark.
So I'm going to say the words, if you chat, and then you're going to say, you're going to get banged. Let me do it once, and then we'll all do it together, and then we'll do the whole thing, okay? So I'll go, if you're going to chat, and then you guys go, you're going to get banged. If you're going to chat, you guys,
you're going to get banged.
All right, let's do it.
Claudio Ranieri, quite contrary to popular belief. Money won't buy you a championship, you gotta play well every week. Now some blokes no one was supposed to remember just turned into English title contenders, blowing my mind every weekend on NBC. If you're gonna chat,
you're gonna get banged.
Jamie Vardy crashed Liverpool's party and fucked up everything. If you're gonna chat,
you're gonna get banged.
Hashtag LTD, my friends. Danny Drinkwater's living the dream. Well, Martial cost Man United about 50 million pounds. For that price, you could buy the Foxes twice and probably triple your goal count. No one knew who Mahrez was, and now they all want to have his babies. Because he's playing with the best team we've ever seen, besides those USA ladies. If you're going to chat,
you're going to get banged.
Damn near made a home in the relegation zone till they won 7 in their last 9 games. If you're gonna chat,
you're gonna get banged.
From the bottom of the barrel to the top of the table, that's one hell of a football team. When that Mahrez cross lands in the box, better hope it don't connect with that number 9, because in due time he's gonna put it in the back of the net. Someday they'll make a movie about this oh-so-magical side. Directed by Laszlo Nemes. Screenplay by Arlo White. Tom Hardy can play Jamie Vardy. Mahrez played by Aziz Ansari. Hell, maybe even Raj and Devo can go to the Oscar party. Well, they traveled down to Chelsea, South London, round 38. Will they claim the title at Stamford Bridge, or will jazz hands get in the way? Win or lose, the Fox's story surprised most everyone. We'll still be singing Vardy's song when all is said and done. If you're gonna chat,
you're gonna get banged.
We'll remember this squad too, we're old and gray, and we'll still get the tingling. If you're gonna chat,
you're gonna get banged.
Everybody raise a Guinness tonight. Thank you so much for having me play.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thanks to all of our guests tonight. Bob Lee, Lars Ulrich, Paul Carr, Arlo White, Bethany Perkins, Ben Clark. And of course, the one and only Ms. Loretta Lynch. Rog, you've got some late breaking news.
US Women's National Team play Colombia tonight, scheduled after we scheduled this, just to be clear. It was close. US Men's National Team, take note. US Women's National Team played Colombia. Colombia 0. US Women's National Team 7.
It's close. We'd also like to thank our staff, John Johnson, Jen Simons, JW, Lexi Tannenholz, David Ziplow. And thanks to our sponsors for the evening, Mini and Guinness. Drink responsibly. We'd also like to remind you about our first ever blazer drive with donations going to Hope for the Warriors Transition Services Program. If you didn't bring a blazer to donate tonight, you can mail them directly to Hope for the Warriors. Send it to the attention of Jennifer Friedel, no relation. Hope for the Warriors, 55 Water Street, Concourse Level, New York, New York, 10041. Most of all, we'd like to thank all of you, seriously, for coming. And we'd like to raise a glass with each and every one of you right after this at Brass Monkey. It's right down the street. Follow the crowds. Arlo, thank you so much for gracing.
Arlo, just tell us now, before we leave the stage, who's going to win the Premier League this season?
Well, you,
the best team in the league.
The best team after 38 games, Rog, will be deserving winners.
That'll be the US Women's National Team.
Ladies and gentlemen, Arlo White.
If you're gonna chat, you're gonna get banged. If you're gonna chat, oh, you're gonna get banged. If you're gonna chat.